This is Coda Radio, episode 562 for March 21st, 2024. Hey, good buddy. Welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show. Yep, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the whole world of technology. My name is Chris, and grabbing the PDF hot off the printer, it's our host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
80 pages of just dripping glory right off the Justice Department grill.
Fire, man. It's just fire.
I mean, it's fire. It's going to end in failure, but it's fire. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's so spicy. I got back just in time from scale, you know, because I literally got back last night. We rearranged this show so I could record with you on a Thursday. The DOJ drops this bomb this morning. And, you know, everybody was talking to me, came up and said, where's Mike? You know, that's what everybody says. They say when I go to these events, they say, where's Mike? And usually I used to say, you know, he's in Florida. He's got the kid. It's quite a trek, you know, got the biz, et cetera, et cetera. But that never really leaves them with like a sensation of satisfaction. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I've come up with a new answer this year, and I think
Wait,
really
works. Can I guess?
Yeah.
He's doing a deposition in a potential Apple trial.
No, that'd be really good. No, I went for something that seemed pretty on character, but not actually the truth. But, you know, if we just lean into it, I just tell him, oh, you came. You just partied a little too hard last night, and you're back in the hotel room shaking off a hangover. And like, oh, he's here? And I'm like, yeah, keep your eye out for him.
Jesus Christ.
They love
Great.
It.
So they're going to go, you know, harass some poor dude on the plane with the shakes on the way back.
Yeah, well, that just means they're looking for you I think it's like a game. It's like, I don't know if you ever played that game as a kid where they tell you to go hunt for that bird in the forest that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah.
That's you. You're that bird.
Well, I was not, just so we all know, partying hard this weekend because I have decided, when I say I mean the universe. You went to the conference, yet I got the plague.
Yeah, yeah.
Because children do not apparently understand that they're murder vectors. So
you didn't make it to the conference, but you did get your selfie snapped with a listener.
I did.
Yeah, and you had a big old cigar in that photo. I'm like, man, look at that guy. He looks like a boss with a cigar. You know, you're the kind of guy who can hold a cigar like a mob boss.
I'm from New Jersey.
It just seemed natural. I don't even know if it was lit. It just looked
well.
Good,
the best is the fat belly, the slightly rosy cheeks. I would say the two martinis before helped.
You know, but you bring it in. Like, even if you don't light it, just walk around with that thing, right? It's a brand.
It's just like Churchill, right? You just walk around like chewing on it.
But it is good. It is good to be back. We drove like crazy. It turns out California is obscenely long when you go north to south.
Mm.
And, you know, when you go to Pasadena, you're basically going to the bottom of this thing, almost. And then you got to drive all the way up through California, which is horrendously long, all the way through Oregon. And then I live basically at the north end of Washington.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So it's a three-day drive home, three-day drive there.
Well, and one day I'm going to make it to Sasquatch country. That's my goal.
You know, when you drive around, we took the coast, too. When you drive around, they got the Sasquatch everywhere. They really lean into the squanch. You'd love it.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah. It's a big cultural thing in the Pacific Northwest.
I guess it's like we lean into drunken criminal behavior and gators. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's our brand. It's
or
our brand.
New Jersey. So, can I just have a second? I know I'm jumping the gun. The Department of Justice chose New Jersey as the venue.
It's so perfect. It really is so good.
I feel like that's going to be interesting when envelopes start passing hands. But hey, who knows?
Coder.show/membership. Support this show directly. We have no sponsors right now, so our members matter more than ever. And I believe there are a couple of more Jar Jar promo codes to take advantage of, which will take $2 a month off the lifetime of your membership. I don't even know how that deal got authorized. I didn't greenlight that. I thought these things had to go through me. Somehow, Jar Jar seems to get these deals through. But you know what? What am I going to do? Take it away? That makes me the bad guy. I can't be the bad guy. So I'm going with it. You can use the promo code Jar Jar. It works for new members. Existing members, too? What, you just giving the place away now? All right, existing members, too. You can use promo code Jar Jar as a thank you. Or if you want to reactivate your subscription. Okay, that one makes sense. Yeah, no, you did good there. All right, come here. You get that. That's for you. You know what I think? You know, there's like, what, 4 redemptions left? I don't know how many there's left. The guy's incompetent, so I don't know how many. I don't know. But I know he just puts a few more in there. So coda.show/membership if you want to support the show directly. In a world where this gimmick worked, we wouldn't need any sponsors. That's possible, right, Char? No? You did the numbers, not possible? Okay. Well, I suppose another way you can support each production directly is through the boosts. Those boosts go to each production, and a split goes to Editor Drew, goes to the network, myself, and, of course, into the pot for Mr. Dominic. That's a way to support each show directly without any middlemen. Nobody taking their cut, no system that can be stopped. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about? You know, maybe Mike says something stupid and we get canceled. I mean, that's right. That could happen. The boosts don't care. And we also get to read your messages on the show. Anything above 2,000 sats we will read on the show, and we greatly appreciate, and it's one of our favorite segments in the show. So between the members, with the Coder QA and the keeping the show on the air while we're struggling, and the boosters, we show up every week, even if there isn't a sponsor to pay our, you know, yeah, proverbial paychecks, as it were. So we do appreciate your support. Coder.show/membership, or send a boost to support each individual production. Coder.show/membership. Yes, so this morning the DOJ announced they are suing Apple over an iPhone monopoly in a, quote, landmark antitrust case. It's something to behold. And I got a couple of minute clip from CNBC as the news broke this morning. They do a decent job outlining it, so I'll let them do the heavy lift here.
Breaking news here on Apple out of the DOJ. Eamon Javers has it. Eamon?
Sarah, this is a civil antitrust lawsuit filed in the United States District Court for the District of New Jersey, and it alleges by the DOJ that Apple illegally maintains a monopoly over smartphones by selectively imposing contractual restrictions on and withholding critical access points from developers. The Department of Justice alleges Apple has broken the law, specifically Section 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act, in 5 specific ways. One, by blocking innovative super apps. They say Apple has disrupted the growth of apps with broad functionality. The second is by suppressing mobile cloud streaming services. They say Apple blocked the development of cloud streaming apps and services that would allow consumers to enjoy what they call high-quality video games and other cloud-based applications without having to pay for expensive smartphone hardware. The third is by excluding cross-platform messaging apps. The Department of Justice says Apple has made the quality of cross-platform messaging worse, less innovative, and less secure for users so that its customers have to keep buying iPhones. The fourth is by diminishing the functionality of non-Apple smartwatches. Apple, they say, has limited the functionality of these third-party smartwatches so that users who purchase the Apple Watch face substantial out-of-pocket costs if they don't keep buying iPhones. And the fifth category here is limiting third-party digital wallets. They say Apple has prevented third-party apps from offering tap-to-pay functionality, inhibiting the creation of cross-platform third-party digital wallets, which, of course, is important in the whole paying ecosystem here. Now, the court process is expected to take months, if not years here. And guys, there's a political overlay to all of this, because if President Biden is to lose to Donald Trump in the fall, it's a Trump Department of Justice that could be in charge of handling the end game of this case, not a Biden one, depending on that election outcome. So it's not at all clear how that would play out, although some of the Trump people were involved in instigating this investigation into Apple in the first place back during the first Trump administration. So a lot of moving parts here, guys. But the Department of Justice now suing Apple on antitrust grounds. Back over to you.
All right. So there we have it. A process that started, they say, under the Trump administration, which has been brought to its conclusion. Well, its beginning, I suppose, under the Biden administration. Like you noted, it's filed in Jersey. It's the U.S. government plus 16 states, including California, have signed along with this thing. Interesting. My state hasn't, the home state of Microsoft and Amazon. I just find that kind of interesting that they haven't. There's a lot to this, and the vibe is intense from the DOJ. It opens. The opening paragraph is, quote, in 2010, a top executive emailed Apple's then CEO about an ad for a new Kindle e-reader. The ad began with a woman who was using her iPhone to buy and read books on her Kindle app. She then switches to Android smartphone and continues to read her books using the same Kindle app. The executive wrote to Jobs, one, quote, message that can't be missed is that it's easy to switch from iPhone to Android, not fun to watch. Jobs was clear in his response, writing Apple would, quote, force developers to use its payment system to lock in both developers and users on his platform. The document continues to read, "Over many years, Apple has repeatedly responded to competitive threats like this one by making it harder and more expensive for users and developers to leave than by making it more attractive for them to stay." And then just a little bit further down, a couple of paragraphs later, they write, quote, and this is some serious spice here, they say, from the complaint, the suit directly, quote, "Rather than respond to competitive threats by offering lower smartphone prices to consumers or better monetization for developers, Apple would meet competitive threats by shape-shifting rules that restrict its App Store guidelines and developer agreements that would allow Apple to extract higher fees, thwart innovation, offer less secure or degraded user experiences, and throttle competitive alternatives."
Wait a minute. We've heard that policy before. Ready? Now, throat sore. Let's see if I can do it. "I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it further." And Apple always alters it further, right? They're always like, "Hey, what's that? Hey, you're making quite a lot of money on that Fortnite there, aren't you?" Yeah, no, you pay us.
Yeah, very much. But this is, I mean, that just gives you a sense of the tone. They are going for the throat. The DOJ says they may seek a breakup of Apple into smaller companies to have what they call, quote, structural relief of this issue.
Delusional.
And they feel like they're a key innovator here. They're a key partner in the market. Tim Wu, who is described, I have links in the show notes, described as one of the architects of Biden's antitrust policy, says that it's really about injecting innovation into the market.
Everybody that you guys are going after, and I say you guys because you did architect some of this, yeah. You know, you did orchestrate some of this. Why go after Americans' standout innovative companies and agree with basically what the Europeans are saying in a way that could change the way we innovate, the way we lead?
The idea, I think, is to hold America's best companies' feet to the fire, that if they're forced to compete, they get better, that dominant companies become stagnant. It's an American tradition. We did it with IBM. We did it with AT&T. We did it with Microsoft. And frankly,
Standard Oil.
But I mean, I'm talking about tech leaders. Yeah. And I'm saying that, you know, suing Microsoft ended up being the best thing for the tech industry. And the theory is that no one disputes that Apple is a great phone, a great, great company. But, you know, the law is not a popularity contest. And the idea is that they are got where they are and have now built the moat to prevent anyone else from getting in there, preventing people from switching new applications. So the idea is in favor of more innovation.
So you see, the way you make the market more innovative is by government manipulating the market. And this is in the suit, a quote from the suit. They write, "A path-clearing antitrust enforcement case brought by the United States and state attorneys general against Microsoft opened the market and constrained Microsoft's ability to prohibit companies like Apple from offering iTunes on the Windows PC." And then they go on to build a case. In fact, they spend an awkward amount of time in this 80-page document building the case how their clever antitrust enforcement against Microsoft set a stage for a 15-year boom, which now Apple benefits from and has now become a monopoly. And all of this success is because they, quote, cleared the way for Apple by limiting Microsoft's ability to prevent iTunes from shipping on Windows. So Apple's success is really because of their antitrust enforcement against Microsoft, i.e. justifying their current antitrust enforcement.
Absolutely true. I remember Janet Reno in Cupertino just hacking away on an iPhone prototype.
Yeah. I remember Ballmer saying, we definitely don't want our customers to have access to iTunes, and we never want to see the iPod in the Windows ecosystem because we don't want those customers. Remember that?
Remember, it's funny because we're turning into the member berries from South Park, but it was quite the opposite, right? Microsoft was PO'd that Apple kind of wow, we're old.
Remember, it was FireWire, and it was a big contention that it wasn't compatible with Windows, and it was a huge market.
It was a huge market, and like Steve Jobs had to be brought kicking and screaming to make a Windows app, and the Windows app was based on Rhapsody at the time. Not Rhapsody, the music client, Rhapsody, the software stack. Goddamn, we're old, dude.
Yeah, they acquired that.
They acquired it. And it was just like one of the worst Windows apps.
Apple came screaming and kicking to the platform, which did not fight them at all. Microsoft welcomed iTunes.
They were like, cool.
And I would argue Microsoft made improvements to the USB stack to make iPods work better with Windows.
Because of the data transform volume at the time.
And remember how they had to release a special service pack to XP to enable USB 2 speeds?
Yep.
So this version of history is perverted and wrong. This isn't how it went down at all. And I would say, if anything, Microsoft welcomed iTunes with open arms and the iPod users because it meant people would stop bleeding to Macs to use their iPod. It's funny. How, it's just why that bothers me, because it makes me feel like internally they think they're the responsible for these companies' success. Like, they might actually believe that crap.
You know, it's funny, too, because we keep hearing in all these cases that, you know, U.S. antitrust law, we're not lawyers, right, requires you show consumer harm, but and harm is defined as financial harm, right? Like, costs go up, prices have to go up. If anything, Apple has done an incredibly aggressive and frankly effective job at commoditizing its complements, particularly software developers, in just really like grinding out all the margin in iOS software. But if you look at their nearest competitor, Android, same deal. Then if you look at, I would say, their second nearest competitor, the web, same deal. It's just really hard to charge for software now.
Yeah, and I think they're conflating several things.
Yeah.
They keep talking about, I mean, because really, you could read this PDF as if Mike and Chris hired a couple of lawyers to write a document about every complaint and every issue we've ever brought up on this show in the history of this show. So you and I have been front and center at every single one of these debates, and the audience, we are on record where we fall down on these things. And so in a way, it's almost like an emotional document. I can't really describe it any other way, because facts don't always seem to apply. They really go after Apple, and it feels like this was intentional because it's one that connects with every single normie and every single media anchor I've seen covering this morning, and it's the green bubbles.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
In fact, Merrick Garland said this in his announcement when they did their little live stream song and dance about the suit.
As any iPhone user who has ever seen a green text message or received a tiny, grainy video can attest, Apple's anti-competitive, more difficult for iPhone users to message with users of non-Apple products. It does this by diminishing the functionality of its own messaging, diminishing the functionality of third-party messaging apps. By doing so, Apple knowingly and deliberately degrades quality, privacy, and security for its users.
That audio stream wasn't great. They had a few drops there, but you get what he's saying. And
well, he sent it over SMS, of course.
Yes. He's blaming the technical limitations of SMS on Apple. Now, could Apple do more to support RCS? Yes, and likely they will at some point. Could they do more to open up iMessage, like they could release an iMessage app for Android? Clearly, we've read the emails on the show, which they'll no doubt cite, that talk about how Apple doesn't want to do that because any $25 Android device makes it easy to break out of the ecosystem. Clearly. But I would argue that it's their right to make a good product. Nintendo chat doesn't work with Xbox. And I don't see Nintendo getting sued over it. And vice versa. You see, it's completely placing the blame that Apple is degrading the picture quality and degrading the chat experience, when really they're just implementing the SMS standard, which isn't sufficient anymore. But it gets twisted. And the way it gets twisted, too, is that really lands with normies. It lands with non-technical people and all the people in the news that are writing stories about this.
Or, let me just fry some green bird bacon here. Maybe Attorney General Garland was an Adium user.
Oh, I like this.
And remembers the glory days of one universal chat app for all your services.
You know, but the way it really did that was by just implementing all the proprietary and open ones into one app.
You know, see, why do you have to ruin everything with facts and logic? This document's not about logic, Chris. This is about fifis. We're happy.
It is. It is funny because they also spend a little bit of time calling Apple out on their, quote, $77 billion in stock buybacks in its 2023 fiscal year alone, which, you know, I don't like stock buybacks, but I just like, why is that in there? I guess their argument is, well, that could be spent on innovation instead.
It's weird. Like, they've made like every possible case. Like, some of them are good, right? I think the strongest one in here is the, hey, they're screwing Spotify because they're competing on a platform they own and relieving themselves of restrictions that they put on others. Like that one, that's a strong argument. That's a good argument.
I think they have a strong argument with the cloud streaming game apps too. You know, the DOJ points out that how Apple has blocked that, and that if Apple allowed that, it would reduce hardware requirements, and you know, Apple wouldn't be able to get away with selling a $1,000 phone because you could do it on a $500 phone, and that's kind of true. I mean, I think that's in part also because Apple wants to have the revenue cut, and they make that point. There's things in here that are absolutely true, but to make it stick, they're going to have to argue, and they will argue, that the smartphone is a type of platform that is new and so important that Apple can't have these types of restrictions.
Okay, but iPhone doesn't have 90% market share. No one's required to use an iPhone. And again, going back to our, you know, Robert Bork, I hate myself for this. They have definitely not raised consumer prices in terms of all these software products that the DOJ is talking about. In fact, as we've been bitching and moaning about for 12 years-ish, they've ground them into the ground, right? They've literally pulverized what software developers can charge for software into dust.
How much do you want to bet they actually make that argument, essentially making our point in court to defend themselves?
Tim Cook's going to get up there and be like, no, man, I beat the crap out of them like the Alabama State defensive line.
They'll put a chart up that shows prices of software before the iPhone and the price of software after the iPhone, and it's just going to be down, you know?
Hell, they could use clips from the show. Look at these guys. Tech guy, you know, they've been on the air forever. All right, the one seems like he might be a little hammered, but forget that. And, you know, look how much he hates us. Don't listen to the Swift episode. But look at how much, and it's true. I mean, I remember, like, I started off in the app store $10, and people were charging that. It didn't take too long for, 99 cents to become the norm, and then zero.
Yeah, then it had to be free with some in-app purchases if you can figure out a way.
If you can figure out some scummy ways, like, I remember the big original thing was dark mode. If you don't want to go blind with our obnoxious color scheme that we've intentionally made super bright so that you don't like it, you can give us, $1 a month.
They also claim that Apple is blocking super apps. And here's how they define a super app, and this seems a little off to me. They write, a super app is an app that can serve as a platform for smaller mini programs developed using programming language such as HTML5 and JavaScript.
Oh.
For example, a super app that incorporates a multitude of mini programs might allow users to easily discover and access a wide variety of content and services without setting up and logging into multiple apps.
It's not how that works.
I would say Google is a version of this. I log into Gmail and then I can tab over to YouTube and I'm logged into YouTube. And I can tab over to Docs and I'm logged into Docs. And I can watch content on YouTube. I can post content on YouTube. It seems like that's also written in JavaScript and HTML5. What am I missing here?
Well, they come dangerously close to a really good argument.
Right.
And then because they're government employees that don't work at the no such agency. Hey, guys, loving you. Don't read.
Apple's going to blow this apart.
This is like stupid.
Yeah.
All right. So I think the best argument here, if you want to do the HTML5, which I hate the term because it's been HTML5 for how long, just call it web app, PWAs. Or you know what? Just call it the web. Seriously, like...
Yeah, the web would be fine.
I know I post LinkedIn posts about PWAs all the time. That's called clickbait for potential customers. They're really just web apps because that's what they've always been. There's the meme with the astronaut shooting the other astronaut. It's always been web apps. Apple degrading JavaScript engine performance. And, I mean, we literally have a contemporary example of this. It's kind of brutal what they did in response to the EU trying to make them make web apps and PWAs more viable. They just completely nerfed it, right? They backed off a little bit, but not enough. So if you really want an open market of software, which kind of feels like what the DOJ is, I mean, putting the bubbles aside, because I guess people have anxiety about green bubbles. I have never understood that. I still don't. I'm too old, I guess. The open market continues to be the web, and the web has some problems, like getting people to put a credit card into, you know, JarJarBinks.com is super hard. That's why Stripe exists, right? That's why PayPal exists. Like, these, it's not unheard of to sell software on the web. Or, in fact, I was just listening to an interview on your favorite site, The Verge, with Nilay Patel.
Yeah.
Of the Figma CEO, who, I love this guy. Adobe fails to buy him because the government stops him, and he gets a payday. Why can't we get a deal like this, Chris, where someone fails to buy us, but has to pay us anyway?
Yeah, I forget what they call that clause.
It's a breakup clause.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. It's I need that in everything, dude.
It's corporate alimony. I don't know. I feel like in this 80-page polemic, the DOJ drafters went too far. There are so many easy, like, narrow arguments that you can make that are indefensible. All the stuff that Spotify talks about regarding the difference in the App Store cut and the CarPlay integration and the just capabilities of the Spotify app versus Apple Music, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you are bound to Siri, who is borderline brain dead compared to most smart assistants now, or as we used to call them, lady tubes. The fact that they intentionally nerf web technologies, which I don't know, like if you haven't used Figma or any like really modern web applications, they're really good. I mean, they're borderline desktop quality, if not beyond. I basically run my business from my Slack app, which is just a web app wrapped in Electron, right? It's a web. In fact, I don't need it to be on my dock. I just prefer to have the icon instead of but I could easily run it in Edge or Chrome or hell, even Safari, right? But not on mobile. On mobile, I have to have the app because using it in the web is just god awful. Even though it's it makes no sense. And it's so obvious that it's a strategy tax that they're imposing because they don't want, you know, top-tier web software to compete with native apps. Or not even, they don't even care if you're native, right? But they want you to go through the app store so they get their cut.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why Ionic exists.
The thing is, that's not what this suit is going to go after.
But that's the don't you agree that that's the easier shot?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I'm really surprised they missed the mark by this much, because Apple will just be able to technically demonstrate that they support HTML and JavaScript, and then if they want to, if the DOJ wants, they're going to have to really get down into the weeds and nuance the difference between browser implementations of HTML5 standards and see if that actually lands.
We're going to start talking about WebKit versus Karma. Yeah, right. You know what the baller move for the Apple lawyer is going to be? Whip out his iPhone, open the DOJ website on his iPhone. Is it your website written in HTML and JavaScript? Like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, too, they could point to their investment in WebKit, how they forked it from KHTML, how that's open source. Like, they can play up that in this as well to demonstrate their commitment to open standards.
Well, and that's true. I know we're going to get some hate, but remember when Steve Jobs decided that Adobe was the enemy, and by the way, he was totally correct. If we were running Flash on these smart devices, we would be years behind. They invested hugely, even before that, but particularly at that time, they invested hugely in WebKit for mobile Safari. And those investments were, to their credit, made open source, right? Google got to piggyback off them. Hell, everybody did.
There's also digital wallets in here, the Apple Watch, which I think Apple's going to be able to argue both of those for security and lock-in. Or
Apple Watch is a no non-starter.
The lock-in there is, the lock-in is inherent to the product, I think, on those. So they're going to have no problem there.
Yeah, I feel like if you're buying something called the Apple Watch, you kind of know what you're getting.
The CarPlay one is interesting. So we get a little insight into perhaps why automakers have been bailing on CarPlay recently. This is from the suit as well. Quote, Apple has told automakers that the next generation of Apple CarPlay will take over all the screens, sensors, and gauges in the car, forcing the user experience driving as an iPhone-centric experience if they want to use any of the features provided by CarPlay. Here, too, Apple leverages its iPhone user base to exert more power over its trading partners, including American car makers, in future innovation.
I just had a horrible image flash in my head. I'm driving down I-95. And I'm looking at the fuel gauge and the speedometer, and all of a sudden an iCloud. You need to sign in again with your iCloud password pops.
Yeah, really, right? Out of storage. So first of all, this is technically true if you want to use the, quote, next generation CarPlay experience. However, the classic CarPlay experience remains available. You're not forced to opt into this next generation. And the idea of the next generation is that Apple provides the entire experience. Honestly, I would be interested in a car that did offer that, because CarPlay is better than anything I have ever seen an automaker produce, even the top tier automakers. It was responsible for the purchase of the vehicle. Part of the decision of the vehicle I made is that it supported CarPlay. The screen was large enough, and it would play a factor in purchasing a future car if it had the entire CarPlay integration. I know that sounds odd to people, but I actually trust Apple to develop that more than I trust any car manufacturer to develop that. And I'm not sure I want any of this stuff, but if I was purchasing a car that had that, that would probably play a factor. I don't think I'll ever be buying a car that has that, but I don't know. It's like, yeah, you do if you want to be all in and have the iPhone control the entire experience. I'm not sure what auto manufacturer would want that, but it's interesting to see that that's even in the – it's like every big company that's had a little bit of an issue with Apple got their complaint into this thing. I mean, GM's name's not on that, but it's clearly
– it's GM.
That's from GM. Yeah. and then also, you know, we're going to have Apple go into full damage control mode now, because this is rough on the Apple brand. You know, no. Here's why I feel this way. I just 2 weeks ago had a conversation with an everyday, you know, a tech user, just, you know, they don't really follow this stuff. And they were explaining to me, like I didn't know, about how Apple intentionally degrades the battery to force you to buy new ones. And, you know, completely oblivious to the fact that lithium ion batteries just degrade over time and that, you know, they have so many charge cycles. And he thinks it is, as he said the words, built-in obsolescence.
My mom thinks that too. I've tried to explain it several times. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just as a side, so many normies think the phone is listening to them all the time.
Who knows?
Come on.
Maybe.
Come on. I can understand maybe once while you're running the app for a few minutes, but if the iPhone or an Android device especially were listening to you all the time, the ramifications on your battery would be so significant. The phone would be hot all the time. But also, you know, any Tom, Dick network sniffer could just put it on Wi-Fi only, yeah. and they would be seeing that. But then also think about, like, the inbound data transfer to these data centers of every phone with streaming audio, the massive requirements on their end to process all of that. I think it's actually creepier than they're listening. The reality is these systems have actually modeled us well enough that they can start proactively figuring out what they need to advertise to you. It doesn't work all the time, but when it does work, it's so creepy you think they're listening to you. I heard a guy explain, yeah, I was making food for my dog, and I was talking to my wife about how I wanted to get an apple core, and I wanted to core these apples so I could make this dog food faster. And then I got on my phone. Yeah, it was a podcaster. And I got on my phone, and I saw a thing about apple cores. Oh, it must be listening to me. No. They figured out that you're a dog nut. They figured out that you're a fancy pants that spends money, and they figured out they can advertise these things to you. That's creepier. But normies are walking around thinking that their phone's listening to them, and they're just fine with it. Like, if you really thought it's listening to you, turn it off. Put it in a Faraday cage. Like, don't bring it with you. Don't take it into your bedroom, for God's sakes. If you think this thing's actually listening to you, then take action. It's ridiculous. And so I think these stories about the phone always listening, about how it's built in obsolescence with the battery, even though it's just lithium ion technology, they permanently stick. And this is going to stick too. And the way it's really registered with the normies is the blue versus green thing. I mean, every news anchor I've seen cover this morning, when they get to that point in the document, oh yeah, that's true. I do hate that when I'm texting my dad, I'm trying to send him pictures of the new baby and it's just not working. Yeah, I wish they'd fix that. This stuff sticks, and Apple's going to have to fight this. I wonder if they make a statement at WWDC. Probably not.
No, it's usually not a good idea to talk about pending or current litigation, right? There's a level of irony here in they probably could have avoided this whole thing.
Oh, totally.
And really not lost that much revenue.
Right.
So, like, I don't really care about the green bubble thing, but I understand because I deal with young people now for a lot.
They could have led the way on RCS.
Yeah, no, I think that's where they should actually hold the line, because that is lock-in, and that's, you know, SMS, they are supporting an open stack. Like, I would, yeah. If I was them, I'd defend that first, because I think it's the most effective lock-in.
But look at I think you look at how this has actually gained traction. I mean, would it really harm the iMessage lock-in that much? Keep the bubbles green, but, you know, support more advanced features.
Yeah, but why do it, right? Why make life easier?
Well, now it's in a lawsuit from the United States government. That might be one reason why. It's going to stick.
Without all the bad will from developers, right? Without DHH bitching and moaning all the time, without Microsoft, which we will not know this for years, but I would bet my little hat that Microsoft lobbyists have been out there trying to get Apple to, you know, because of this cloud streaming stuff. Like, there were so many off ramps where they could have just kept.
I mean, even recently, they shouldn't have done this ridiculous, petulant PWA poll for a bit in the EU. Yeah. Right? That's just making the case. Their battle with Tim Sweeney, they could have played that a little bit better, tried to come to a different resolution, because you know that is exactly one of the pillars that is informing this case.
Well, we were off for the week, right? We were pre-record, but there was this whole weird thing where last week they banned the Epic Europe account that they promised Epic they could make. And then Tim Sweeney was like, what the hell? You told us we could do this? And they sent like a nasty letter, it's the kind of letter you read in like old British novels where like the father sends the boy at boarding school, like a chiding letter, like you blah, 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 you're disrespectful. And if you think I'm exaggerating, I urge you to Google it and read what Apple sent them, because it boils down to you said mean things about us on Twitter and we're upset. So, you know, like, do you need to? I feel like there's, because companies are people, right? And they have cultures, and I don't like the whole, like, you know, Adam Newman, oh, the culture, the spirit. But I feel like Apple is a little bitchy. Like, it reminds me of when I was in college, the art students. Like, they're all right, but they get real upset real fast. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they still got a fire in their belly up at this kind of stuff. I mean, their response was pretty strong. It was short. It was concise.
Oh, they said that. They're going to take this to the mattresses, to use the New Jersey, right? They're not going to negotiate at all. So,
well, can you think of a company in tech that has a better legal team? I think Apple's maybe had the best legal team in tech for 15 years, maybe 20 years.
So I have a dream, a battle royale that I would like to see happen one day. Apple's legal team versus Disney's. And you can ask good old Ron DeSantis how that went for him.
I wonder. That would be the ultimate. That would be, you're right. I'd tune in for that.
Craig Federighi's untamed, wild, primal chest hair versus the Dark Lords of the Sith that are Disney's lawyers. I mean, no disrespect to the DOJ, but you guys are going to get ripped apart.
Can I bring up the orange elephant in the room here? This is happening during election year.
Which makes it dumber.
That's awkward. Yeah. It makes it political. It makes it, or at least it makes it liable to get political.
Trump hates Tim Apple, so.
Well, they got along when he was in office. Apple's always been really good about playing to the current administration. Remember, he went to that Arizona opening with Trump, and remember that time he called him Tim Apple? That was great. I mean, that was good times.
He really thought of his name, too. That's the worst part.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, they've tried to be really tight with the Biden administration, but this hasn't gone very well for them. But you have to wonder if this will have any kind of success with a Trump administration should he win in November, because the gal that is running this is, I think, appointed by the president, would likely be replaced if Trump comes into office. And I wonder if that would shift at all. It's hard to say, but this thing either because of that wraps up in the next 14 months, or it goes on and on and on. And I think it's a lock if Biden is reelected. I think it just by default will continue to roll, and it's going to be a multi-year fight.
So let me fry some Arizona Apple factory bacon here. So the best thing that could happen regarding this lawsuit, one, they're going to win anyway, but for Apple, is Trump wins. All they have to do is take their bar tab, open another factory in Texas or Arizona, let Trump do a photo off, and he'll be like, great. And he'll order the whatever her name is to drop the case, so, or probably fire her actually because of her political leaning. Yes.
They'd fire. Yeah, I just wonder. It is, when we talked about this last time, I'd asked the question: do they wait? Does the DOJ wait for the election to be over and then drop this thing? Clearly, the answer is
they
no.
They have to go hard. And Apple, if I was Apple, I would stall and stall and stall, and just see what happens.
I think that's probably that's probably the play. And, you know, the irony of all this, I just think, is this they finally pull the trigger when Apple has had the most market punishment that we've seen in the run of this show. For the last year, Apple's been slowly but surely getting grinded down to by the market. Now at very low levels in the market, but also sales are dropping. Their products are too expensive. There's just a lot of things up in the air. Then you combine the other big tech companies are slobbering all over AI to integrate it into their projects and into their products as fast as possible. And Apple has yet to announce their AI play. So the quote-unquote market, again, is punishing them for that. They're kind of on the ropes in some ways. Not like any major way, like they were a decade ago.
On the ropes?
Insofar as the chatter right now is maybe Apple's lost its luster. Maybe they're no longer part of the Magnificent Seven. You know, maybe they can't innovate anymore. There doesn't seem to be a big impact from the Apple Vision Pro. Like the narrative around Apple is at an all-time low is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying Apple is doing bad. I mean, they're not making as much money as they were. They're still making plenty of money.
Right.
I'm saying the narrative around Apple, outside of brand, but just their narrative around their ability to innovate, their ability to actually sell something in a market right now that's feeling price pressure, like all of the situation in China, which has impacted them greatly. All of these things are bad headwinds already. Like these, and then you have this DOJ case come in. This is another headwind. I mean, this is just, it's a shitty situation for Apple right now.
That's mostly their doing, though. They can't blame the DOJ. I mean,
oh, I agree. This is all they're doing.
Do you know what would be a, I mean, I know this is my hobby horse, but would be like a renaissance for Apple and Apple users and Apple developers? Unleash the iPad. That is some beautiful, powerful hardware that is shackled down by stupid strategy taxes.
Yeah. Unleash the iOS platform in general. I mean, what if that is the positive outcome here, is that the iOS platform is forced to be opened up a bit?
Well, how about you? I mean, I think it's easier on the iPad at this point because it's more, I mean, it is a consumer product, but there's a lot of enterprise use. Make it so developers can build really large software packages and not have to be the Adobes or Microsofts of the world to get money. I don't know. Make it like the Mac used to be, right? Or kind of still is.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done the comparison of, you know, when I buy a Mac, all the software I buy, when you get one of your Linux machines, you get the equivalents for effectively free, or if not actually free, right?
Yes.
People will spend money for good software, but you have to not make the norm free. I really think it's like Apple's created this, you know, I understand why they did it, but they've devalued, you know, they forgot. Why did people buy an Apple II? Well, because it ran Apple Write and Apple Paint. And
yeah, you could load these big old floppy disks in there and run the program you want.
Yeah, people don't buy the machine for the machine. Nerds might, right? We might, because it's like cool. Like, remember the UWA?
See, now you're making the DOJ's case. This smartphones are a special platform. Apple is making the case, well, these are essentially consoles.
No, they're not special, though. I have a PS5 sitting next to me. I didn't buy it because I want to stare at a white Sony totem. I bought it because I want to play the games.
But that's a similar type of lock-in. You can't just you as a developer can't go create something that just runs on the PlayStation 5.
I can't, but when I do, Sony doesn't stop me from charging for it.
I see what you're saying. Your problem really is that in order for Apple to make the App Store like this attractive thing where people can pop apps like they pop pills, they had to drive the prices down to zero. So now there's not really a path for a shop like yours to make money by just publishing an app. You've got to like incorporate a service or do a business play, etc.
All right. Well, didn't we just see, and I'm going to apologize to the guys at BlackPixel if I'm wrong, but didn't we just see like one of the old great indie Mac studios, BlackPixel, go down a couple years ago?
I mean, we've seen so many go down over the years.
We've seen so many go down. And these are like venerable independent developers who, by the way, kids, if you haven't listened to the back catalog at me doing a eulogy for everyone that goes down, you've got a lot to catch up on. It's all Apple's doing. I remember Panic, right? Remember when Panic tried to port all their stuff over? Very old, respected Mac software company. Now they make the...
Yeah, the game machine. They also make Transmit still, I think, and a couple other Mac apps.
But they killed half their iOS software because they couldn't make it. They couldn't justify it.
Yes,
it
right.
Takes time. It takes money. You have to pay designers, even if you're the developer yourself. One, your time isn't free because you have to like feed yourself. I just don't understand how Apple doesn't see, and maybe this won't help them with the DOJ, But the market's not healthy, right? And under what the standard is for antitrust, certainly prices have not raised for consumers.
Yeah, they could probably make that case if they're willing to admit that they have driven the price of software down to nearly zero. They'll just have to be willing to make that case on there.
They're like, we've bankrupted all these people.
Yeah. I mean, they might. And then, of course, you know, they add their 30% cut. This is going to be something we'll just have to keep our eye on. I don't know how we'll cover it in the show. Maybe we'll just sort of watch for the highlights. It's not going to be a week to week thing. I would think there's going to be
appeals and motions, and we will have to have an orange apple special should he win.
We may, you know what I'm also going to keep an eye out for is like the really juicy discovery stuff. I'm hoping we get some of that. Who knows? You know, yeah, I remember depositions of Bill Gates, video depositions of Bill Gates. That was particularly spicy during the Microsoft time.
You know what I want? I want all of Tim Sweeney's texts and emails to all the Apple execs.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure some of them are not safe for work. Like,
ask not what your podcast can boast for you, but what you can boast for your podcast.
Well, hybrid sarcasm is our baller booster this week with 50,000 sats. Hey, rich lobster! Thank you, hybrid. I don't see a message there, but I want to give you a shout out for that. Appreciate
the value. Cheers.
Now, that was from the podcast index. Now, the next one, I'm going to say it's Mr. Seniu Tech 666, who's also a baller booster with 50,000 sats. Hey, rich lobster! Are they right? I know the season is slow, and I wanted to show my hubby's favorite podcast some love. He's a longtime follower and a wonderful husband going into the Army. We couldn't be more proud. We'll listen and boost while he's away. Thanks, guys. Oh, that's amazing.
Thank you, and be safe to the hubby. That's a tough time to be going. God bless.
I would love to know. I would love to know his name, and also, how does he listen? I mean, does he have like internet on his iPhone? Or his Android phone? How does that work? Do you get like general internet access where you're deployed?
Yeah, they have access on base. Yeah,
I know, but you get access to everything. Like they just let you they let you listen to this thing. Could you imagine we're going to radicalize somebody?
Uncle Elon has hooked us up.
Oh,
we're over Starlink.
You know what? You know what else is great? It's like we're on the inside. You know what I mean?
Of the Army?
Yeah. We got a guy on the inside now. I don't know what that means.
Lots of guys on the inside.
I know. Well, we probably do. They should be giving us shout outs because, you know, maybe we could just slowly but surely work together, make things a little better for everybody.
I want a guy in the Federal Reserve.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Federal Reserve. That'd be good. Secret Service would be kind of interesting.
Seriously, CIA, God. Oh, they're lit. I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, if you and I just the octopus murders, and I'll end the conspiracy theory there. You have to watch it on Netflix.
Okay.
All right. But God bless the hubby. Be safe. It's
yes.
It's wild out there.
Yes, we really appreciate that. I should mention, I should say to my wife, his wife boosted into his favorite podcast. I mean, I'm just saying, honey. I'm just saying. That's really sweet, though. We really appreciate it. Ty Alaskan Ben comes in with 31,337 sats. I'm a software engineer, and while I love listening to all the other JB shows, I normally just don't have time or the energy to tinker in my free time. I guess I feel most at home with the salty vibe here. Oh, okay. Well, that's the bacon. He says, that said, I've slowly been finding places in my day job where stuff that JB has mentioned is fitting and solving problems. I think it's like Zelgy or something. It's like a Tmux teammate replacement or a screen replacement.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Lunar Vim has been really great for remote development, they write, and I'm planning to pitch packaging one of our projects with Nix to the rest of the team. Keep up the great work. Nice! Checking them off there. Really appreciate that, Ty Alaskan Ben.
Nice. Thank you, yeah.
Oh, here we go. I was hoping we'd hear from them. Tampa Tech Trekkie boosts in with 30,500 sats.
Life. Tiny little life forms.
This is, I hope this gets you guys over the 200K this week. Thank you for that value, Tampa Tech Trekkie. We really appreciate it. Lego Feet writes in with 22,345 sats. And they write, it's another spicy take. I love it. I mean, it's no presidential assassination plot like we've heard before, but keep them coming.
Wait, what?
And he says, I'll be Captain Obvious now. The sentiment behind words will never hurt me. Is bang on. But every now and then, Chris talks about stacking some W's, and that's clearly a mental health call out to the community. I'm on board with your idea, but there's a middle ground somewhere. The end game isn't needing pre-approval for all communication. It stops earlier than that. The value of, quote, don't be a dick is core to that. The censoring is just an overcorrection for people that cannot be a dick. And then he sent a second boost saying boosting to raise the sats for this episode.
Yeah, that's fair. That's all. I think that makes sense, right? Like, it's, I mean, I don't, Chris, do you think there are listeners who are that much younger than us collectively?
I mean, I think on average, probably in our range, but I know we have folks on each end. I met a couple of retired individuals at scale, and of course I met a couple of kids. So they're on both ends.
So I remember going to conferences in like New York, and the quote, they didn't call it a code of conduct back then, but they said rule number one and last rule, don't be a jerk, don't be a dick, something like that. So yeah, right. I mean, it's just like your mama taught you. You just got to be like nice. You got to be polite.
Thank you, Lego Feet. Great point.
B-O-O-S-T.
Appreciate you. Torped came in with a row of McDucks.
Things are looking up for old McDuck.
And they write, I've been compiling some code for my ARM64 phone recently, and I had a bit of fun with looking into compiler flags. Do either of you have any fun compiler stories? A compiler story. I have a compiler adjacent story.
Ooh.
I used to play around with Gentoo. And one of the things that was fun with Gentoo is there was this wiki and this community around figuring out the compiler flags you could use for your particular CPU and, you know, what you were going to use the machine for. And, I mean, at least back in the day, it did seem like it made slight improvements. You know, I don't really recall after, like, stopping that to noticing any difference as computers got faster. Like, that period of time seemed to just go away. And so I stopped bothering. But to me, it always was so incredibly just strange that you could build a program and it wouldn't be just absolutely perfectly optimized for that particular machine you're running on, for that architecture. I didn't understand that at first and thought that, you know, it just would inherently work that way. So that was a fun learning experience.
Yeah, I think I don't have a specific one that pops into mind easily, but I do remember quite a bit of pain back in my early days of realizing that C++ compilers are different, especially if they're in Visual Studio. So that was fun.
Yeah. Good times. Thank you, Torp. Appreciate that. Trey Fordham comes in with a row of ducks. I wanted to boost Coder because I feel like it doesn't get as much love as the other JB shows, but I love Mike's take on business news. This is also a boost in appreciation of the Vision Pro cliffhanger from a few episodes back. Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, I really thought you'd end up with that thing.
No. I mean, first of all, when Apple can't sell me something, something's gone horribly wrong.
I can feel myself waiting for WWDC, waiting for them to, like, announce multi-monitor mode and a couple of other killer apps, and then me going, maybe, because I think this is a 2-3-year device. I don't think they're going to have an update next year. So if they updated and improved the software quite a bit, maybe I'd consider it. I think the key question that I came up with that remains is if you could do some of your work on an iPad, then you could do your work on a Vision Pro, perhaps with more screens. That limits it.
I feel like they're going to put a big effort into AI, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They're probably filming it right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Moving right along. Thank you very much for the boost, Trey. We really do appreciate that. And we had a boost also come in. I think this might be our last one. Nope, not quite. From Venimax. We got some great support.
Boost!
Venimax came in with 4,200 sats. As I appreciated Mike outlining the billing models for small software shops. If you're considering ideas for new segments, oh, this is new. People should boost in ideas for segments.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's great.
I'd like to hear more about the prominent venture capitalists and their history in relation to the tech industry.
Ooh.
Most of the major plays, the VC folks you've mentioned, were before my time. You know, that is an interesting story right now. And the VC world is still alive in tech, but the amounts, if it's not an AI program or some sort of AI adjacent, as they call it. Yeah, way down. Way down.
Yeah, this is down. I mean, this might be the right time to do it because this is a fallow period, right? This is Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to DJ at PTC for boosting 5,000 sats. No message. And Southern Fried Sassafras came in with Rodux. I heartily support the boost becoming a means to recommend sci-fi books. That's a great idea. So you can blame Jar Jar for that. In that vein, I think you'd all would like The Almost Human. It's 2013-2014 era. Sadly, only one season. It follows Carl Urban, who plays detective forced to work with a human looking like an android, or an android that looks like a human. It even features Bitcoin as the currency used in the future society. Oh, well, you got me right there. That's great. Thank you, Southern Fried. Please do. I just finished Westworld with the wife, and she wants me to watch some cutesy Apple TV series show in the meantime. I need help. Give me another deep, rich sci-fi or sci-fi adjacent show. Preferably not fantasy, but, man, if it's good enough, I might consider it. Thank you, Southern Fried. Appreciate it. Noob Steve came in with Spaceballs boost, 12,345 sats.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life.
He says, thanks for a recent shout out we gave him. He says, I don't know if he got any exposure for it or any clicks for it, but exposure he appreciates. And he wants to know if we've seen this. He writes, I feel like everything is going in the freelance direction right now. They have freelance programs for taxis, delivery drivers, drone pilots, etc., and now coding. As a drone pilot, I know it's a race to the bottom pay-wise. Great for quick jobs, but there's no benefits. I thought about seeing if I could get some basic stuff for extra cash to spend on boosts. Lol. And he links us to dataannotation.tech / coders, where they basically have, you know, quick coder jobs. Boom, boom. How to get started in 4 quick steps. 1, create an account. 2, take the starter assessment. 3, complete engaging tasks. And 4, get paid weekly. Yeah, what do you think about this? Everything is kind of going to you become an LLC. There is some truth to that.
I think we're going back to the days of 1770 whatever, right? It's going to be you're working out of your house, kind of, and you're an LLC. I mean, they were just sole proprietorships effectively back then. But yeah, you're an LLC. Noob Steve, we're kind of the worst people to ask about this.
Yeah, that is true. We've been living that life for a long time.
Long time, right? Like, yeah, I think there's going to be big firms that have a lot of employees and a lot of infrastructure. And there's going to be maybe... See, I worry that like the hardest place to be is the middle, right? Because you have the overhead of the big firms, but not the... All right, so one of the other boosters said they like the business stuff. I have been trying to hire a business development rep because I'm exhausted and, frankly, their base salary is less than developers.
What a great idea.
But the pay expectations, forgetting about commission, right? I love commission. I think it's great. I used to sell suits on commission. I'm a big fan of it. And I... First of all, for me, a red flag, anybody who says they're a sales guy and doesn't want commission, I'm not saying commission only, right, but doesn't care about the commission, that's a problem. But, you know, I looked at my remaining small competitors here, and I've looked at some of the bigger guys. Some of them are paying as little as like $40,000 base, but with a more generous commission. But I noticed those jobs seem to be open, and I wonder how well they're doing. Where others, like, I can't name names because it's a former client, but I know for a fact that they paid their sales guys 150 base and a commission. The commission was structured in a weird way that, like, they could get screwed. But 150 base as a biz dev guy for a...
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I've been, like... This is so terrible. I shouldn't admit this, but I've been listening to like these sales podcasts and all these things, trying to understand because I've done this a number of times and I can't, you know, some of them were good. I'm not saying they were bad, but like they were a sales guy really should be the easiest thing for you to hire because he or she should be paying for themselves within 90 days.
Yeah, it's one of the few times you hire somebody that basically pays for themselves.
You can effectively, if you have the cash flow, you can effectively hire them at a deficit, right? In fact, one of my best clients, he was laughing at me on the phone about a month ago. He said, you just need a sales guy, man. He's like, this is a great idea. Why can't you, like, you know, get more? It's just bandwidth for me. I mean, I have, like, today I was up all night doing, I have some feelings about Cloudflare. We could talk about later. Then I had to do a sales meeting first thing in the morning. Then I was working on another project for the same customer. Then I got an email from another client. It's just, you can't do both. It's just too much.
the context switching, and it's two very different jobs. So it's a complete context switch every time.
And this sounds horrible, but I like track my metrics and stuff on the sales side. I basically cannot close a sale if I pull an all-nighter. Maybe I don't sound right or whatever.
Yeah, for me, it's hard when I'm traveling or if I'm recording doubles. It's like, when do I have time to do the sales job? Yeah, I feel you. I need to consider doing the same. I really should.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I just totally lost how I got here because I'm tired, but...
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it was the tech hiring, independent workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's
a rough biz out there and you get stuck in the middle and you're just really getting squeezed.
Well, I mean, a thing I used to do a lot that I'm not doing, this is kind of to Noob Steve's point, is I used to do a lot of subcontracting for other companies.
Sure.
And I had a lot of employees at the time. The problem with that is, like, their whole business model is basically margin.
Yeah.
When you're responsible for the deliverable and they're dealing with the customer, it's their incentive to keep the customer happy and to maximize what they're getting out of you. Now, you might say, well, of course. But that leads in software where it does have to be an iterative, creative process. That leads to some pretty unsustainable outcomes where, one of my pride things is like I have never, you know, like had a super bad problem with a customer, really. I tend to just like, okay, you're not happy, I'll fix it. But you get screwed. And in a subcontracting situation, they own that end relationship. So it's not like you're investing in goodwill to get the next order a month later or whatever. You're just, they'll be like, okay, and you know what? Yeah, like, the incentives are totally mismatched, right? It's just, I don't know. I didn't want to talk about this yet, Chris, but this is something I think we're going to be on the business side going into because I need someone dedicated to doing the BD stuff because it's...
That'd be interesting to follow. Yeah, I think that's a good insight. And also good insight by Noob Steve. Thank you for that boost. Healthcare Anon comes in with 3,434 cents.
Coming in hot with the boost.
Hey, Mike and Chris, I've been working as a junior sysadmin in healthcare for about a year and a half now, and I'm wondering how I should approach practices at the company. Our tech stack is woefully out of date. I currently administer a Windows 2008 box, a RHEL 5 box, and an OpenBSD 5.4. Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, I just vomited. What?
Ooh, I've tried to get on the same page with my manager, and when we can get these things updated due to critical software that's been running on there from the 90s, it is a massive plan. It's been measured in 2 to 3 years, if not a decade, for the process. I've mixed feelings around the situation as I feel I should silently work on my given role of managing users and not step on toes. Yet the security risks are worrying, and I feel like I'm squandering my time on systems that were released when I was in elementary school. Any guidance would be appreciated.
Well, one, the fact that you were in elementary school in 2008 is very depressing for me, but moving along.
I do follow like this sensation of, man, I'm spending all my time working on last decade's tech instead of working at a job that's teaching me the current stuff that could build a resume.
Yeah, but is Windows Server 2008 even getting security updates?
I mean, I think really you're still learning good practices, and it's really about your ability to learn and adapt, document, work in a team. No. Like those things don't really depend on which particular technology you're working on.
No, I'm not worried about him. I'm just like, I thought that was end of life.
Yeah, well, it's bad. Well, so is RHEL 5. I mean, I feel their concern there because this is also a healthcare system, right? So we're talking patient records here and stuff like that.
Yeah, so practical advice other than me being horrified, which I really shouldn't be. I've seen enough access businesses at this point.
Yeah, this isn't too shocking, but it's in the kind of gross category.
It's weird that they somehow got away with HIPAA compliance. I have a feeling they have some weird intranet stuff or some hardcore like tunneling or VPNs going. I don't know. Write back if you want to tell us. So you are right to be concerned, but remember, you're their junior guy. So you got to, I would say, speak softly and try to learn what you can. But if you do see something really scary, just gently message it to your managers, right?
Yeah. You could always keep notes as well to yourself. So if something came up in the future, you've got documentation.
On the other hand, you know, in the future, as you evolve in your career, having this rather nutty experience is going to be a big asset to you.
Yeah. And if you ever do a podcast, you'll have great stories.
You'll have incredible stories.
Yeah. Yukon Cornelius comes in with 9,000 sats.
Fun will now commence.
Mike, can you give me any advice for someone who's looking to transition from a mid-level dev to a team lead role?
Ooh, that's
big question.
Never thought about that. Trying to think of things I did wrong. Okay, yeah. So process is boring and annoying, but you need it.
You know, that's a good point, because getting other leadership to recognize your leadership capabilities is going to be in how you do process, if you have an opinion-informing process, building things like that that set examples. You need to have traits that other leadership would recognize.
This one I think is I'm a little less confident in, but I feel like this is a character flaw in me and how I handle issues at work. If you're managing the team, you probably should try to take a step back and not always save the day when they have an issue. It's more about allocating, you know, the team, right? Allocating. It's like playing a Final Fantasy, I don't know if you're familiar, but Final Fantasy Tactics or that new Marvel Forbidden Sons or whatever it was game, where you're managing the different combatants, the different players, than just doing everything yourself, because it doesn't scale and it causes a ton of trouble.
That's a great journey to be on, though.
Yeah, God bless.
I think if anybody else out there has tips, do boost those in, and we'll cover those, because I think there's got to be a lot of people thinking about that. It's a good North Star as well. Thank you for that. Thank you everybody who boosted in. We had several that were under the 2,000 on air cut too, but we appreciate that. We had 18 total boosters across 24 boosts, and we stacked a handsome 253,575 sats. Thank you, everybody. If you'd like to boost into the show, you can get a podcast app that supports it at podcastapps.com. Fountain FM has been fantastic since the 1.0 release. Podverse is GPL cross-platform and available on the web. And Castomatic is the Cadillac for the iOS platform. Check it out at podcastapps.com. You can get your sats through Strike. Send them over to Lightning Network and boost into the show with your message. We appreciate the support of this production. Thank you, everybody. We really do appreciate that. And, of course, a shout-out to our members as well, coder.show/membership. You can support the show with your Fiat Fun coupons directly that way, and that's also extremely appreciated. All right, Mr. Dominic, is there anywhere you want to send the good people before we get out of here?
Go to alice.dev if you also have ancient Windows data that you need to convert it to something useful.
There you go. That's a good idea. You can follow me at chrislass.com or at chrislass on the Weapon X Network. And at Coda Radio Show is the podcast network. The show, whatever it is. This is a podcast, right? I think so. Anyways, we have a handle over there, at Coda Radio Show. Or, you know, there's... Oh God, who cares? It's Twitter. I don't know. There's links.
Wow.
You probably care more about that. I can't be bothered anymore. But great show notes. Lots of stuff we referred to, including audio and the PDF for the suit against Apple. coder.show/562. You'll find our RSS feed over there. It's really simple and it's syndicated. You can put it in your podcast app of choice, or just find Coder Radio in the podcast index. Thanks so much for joining us. We're back to our Tuesday time at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern next week. We'll see you then.